Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, my guest is Scott Myers from selfstorageinvesting.com. Scott is a very good friend. I've invested with him. He's a phenomenal mentor, coach, investor. So it's my pleasure and privilege to have him here. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? And Scott is very fast talking. That's one thing. He's probably the fastest talking person I know. So my audience, you're going to hear Scott talk a little bit faster than usual. So Scott, how is the weather in Indy? How's Indy treating you?
Indy is treating me just fine. I'll try to slow down so that everybody can keep up. But at the time of this podcast, we are awaiting springtime. And once again, it's about this time of year when I ask myself, why do I live in the Midwest in the winter? But that's all right. Spring's coming soon.
You must like cold and snow. That's the reason.
That anybody likes it, we tolerate it. How's that?
Fair enough. So let's start by chatting a little bit about your charitable work. People probably would love to hear about self-storage, but you do some amazing charitable work. And I wanted to have you talk a little bit about what you do. You go build houses for homeless folks in Mexico?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always been at kind of at the heart of our business since the beginning, since the genesis. And that was, you know, we wanted to, when I say we, my wife and I, we wanted to build a business that not only would give us time to be able to raise our kids and have time for our family, but also have time to be able to serve and to serve with our family. And so, real estate is one of those avenues in which your schedule can be flexible, and it allows that that free time, if you set it up right, and the passive income to be able to do so. So I struggled through apartments and houses early on in my career, but it wasn't until I got into self-storage that it gave us the ability to be able to do that. So now, yeah, we're gone about 6 weeks to 2 months out of the year, and we do work in the Dominican Republic and in Mexico, and we work alongside of YWAM, which is a youth with a mission, and they have a whole program called Homes of Hope, where basically we write the check for the house to be built and all the furnishings inside of it. And then we pay for our staff and our students in our investment side of our business to go along these trips with us. And so I not only teach people how to become millionaires and self-storagers, but we're also teaching and incubating people to get out onto the mission field and create, hopefully, missionaries, whatever that may mean for these people, even if it's just coming back and serving in their own communities. And so we do 2 houses a year. This year we'll do 3. And the goal is to continue to do as many as possible. We would like to say that we would do 1 more per year than we did the previous year. We're not quite on track for that, but I certainly hope that we have the opportunity to do that in the future.
Scott, this must be a very humbling experience. And I think you take your kids with you, right?
Absolutely, on every single trip. They were the ones that kind of started this. We kept saying, we're going to go out and build a house and we're going to do this. And when they were really young, then finally my daughter said, well, why don't we just go do that? And I said, yeah, that's right. There is no reason for us to wait any longer. So we did, and continue to go on and take our friends and associates with us.
I love what you do. This is a giving from the heart. And not only that, next time you go, let me know. I actually want to take maybe one of my kids and go with you, contribute some money to the good cause and contribute some manual labor. I'm not big into manual labor, but I'll put the nail into the wall.
That's all right. Neither am I, but it's always good to get out there and get a little bit dirty. And you know what? We just set the dates for the next build, so I will send that over to you after this call.
Thank you. Now let's talk about self-storage. That is the asset real estate sector that I absolutely love. We've made quite a number of investments from our flagship fund, Tempo Opportunity Fund. We have investments into 2 self-storage ground-up constructions. We have, I'm trying to remember, 3 or maybe even 4 loans with you on self-storage conversions. And I'm excited to potentially participate in the equity of these projects. And we're looking into some more ground-up constructions with you too. Mm-hmm. So I love this sector. Why self-storage? Talk a little bit about the benefits of self-storage.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of happened on it out of desperation, if you want to call it that. As I mentioned briefly earlier, I was in the single family rental business. I had about 80 single family houses and about 400 apartment units and multiple complexes. And that just didn't provide the cash flow and the free time to be able to, you know, build the lifestyle that we wanted. And that's just it's just a tough business. And it'll wear you down, the grind of that on a regular basis, regardless of how good a team that you have built. And every time you turn around, there's just an opportunity for you know, more losses and surprises in the business. And so, you know, after struggling with that for like 4 or 5 years, you know, I realized that I needed to make a change. Didn't want to get out of real estate. Didn't want to go back to work for anybody else. And so when I began looking into self-storage, you know, I looked at, you know, the beauty of real estate, as you know, is that we can borrow money to buy it. It's an asset, that an investment that we can borrow money to buy. It depreciates for tax purposes. Plus, we can force the appreciation on it when we build value in it, either by adding income streams or improving, like a single family house, you know, the actual structure of it. And so for that reason, you know, I absolutely love rental real estate, if it weren't for the tenants and the toilets and the trash. And so when we looked into self-storage, it has all of the benefits of real estate, but it doesn't have tenants. They just have people that are storing their stuff there. And if when they move, when they leave and they take their things with them, I don't have to replace carpet. I don't have to paint. I don't have to fix things. No, I don't get calls in the middle of the night. There's no plumbing. There's no sense of urgency from a management standpoint. It is not management intensive. And, you know, people used to destroy our houses and leave 10 months into a 12-month lease, and we go to court, and by the time we got them out, there was no money to be had. We had to fix the house up again and have all these losses, and it just continued. You know, when you have to build that amount of loss into a business, you know, something's wrong with that business model. In self-storage, when people stop paying us, the lien laws protect the owners, the investors of self-storage. And so that gives us by right, by law, the ability to lock them out, their gate code from the facility. And if they don't pay us, then we have the right legally to auction their items off at an open auction, like some folks have seen on TV. Our losses, our back rent and our late fees. And then when those folks buy a unit, they either put a lock on it and they store that stuff there, or when they move out, still what I'm left with is it's a metal box on a concrete slab. We take a blower or a broom, sweep it out, and we're ready to move in the next person in line. So, I mean, that is probably the biggest benefit and the reason why I got into self-storage. All the benefits of real estate, rental real estate, you know, people in there paying down your basis, paying off the investment for you over time, appreciation, depreciation, but none of the hassles that goes with the rest of rental real estate. So for me, it was just, you couldn't find a better business model.
Yeah, I so much appreciate everything you said. No tenants and toilets. And I have rental properties, and every once in a while there are repairs. Just continuous. It doesn't seem to end. Mm-hmm. If it's not the roof, then it's some kind of a leak. If it's not the leak, it's something else.
Yep.
So having no tenants and toilets. And I was just at your self-storage academy in Orlando. We went to visit a couple of properties. Mm-hmm. And this was actually my first time I physically went to a self-storage facility on the bus tour. Mm-hmm. I was amazing. Went to one of these units and there is nothing there. It's a, you know, just wall.
Yeah.
People can't steal anything. They can't damage. Yeah, they can go try to bang the wall with a hammer. There's nothing there. And it's very low maintenance. Almost, I don't even know, maybe the roof needs some maintenance, but beyond the roof, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. And you don't even put electric there. They can't go, you know, turn on the lights and leave it on. So, yeah, it's... it's a very, I guess, simple asset class in comparison to complicated apartment buildings, malls, and whatnot. And the other observation I had about self-storage is the fact it's both, it's a business and real estate.
Right.
And you can get SBA financing as if you were running an operating business. And SBA financing available at like 90% loan-to-value ratio, loan-to-cost ratio, which is phenomenal. Most of the traditional banks will do 75, but SBA will do 90. Mm-hmm. So for the right projects is a great opportunity.
And it has been, and we've taken advantage of that. And so have a lot of our investor partners and some of our students, because it's an incredible program. I mean, we all know the growth trajectory of our business is usually limited by the amount of capital that we have available, ourselves, as well as, you know, our pool of equity investors or friends and family. But man, if you can bridge that gap with bank financing and all the way up to 90%, that just allows us to do more projects. And yeah, it's been a great ride. We love the business.
What I wanted to ask you is, can you talk a little bit about three types of projects. Maybe talk a little bit about each one. So what I mean here is they're ground up projects. Mm-hmm. Folks find raw land. And they do, you teach this, and I love coming to your mastermind event and your academy, how folks have to do their proper research. They should do feasibility study, 1 mile radius, 3 mile radius, 5 mile radius, car traffic in the area, all the basics on the fundamental to understand supply index. And if the supply is below the demand or significantly below the demand, mm-hmm. there's a tremendous opportunity in the area. You could, and folks can do a ground-up project on their own land. Mm-hmm. So that's one opportunity. The second one, obviously, conversions. We have projects we finance with you right now that are going through conversions, mm-hmm. and there are even potentially bigger opportunities. You can pick up great real estate that was empty, a building, commercial building that was not used, or industrial building, mm-hmm. that can be converted into self-storage. I think the conversion projects could be really exciting too. Yeah. And then I guess value add to the existing projects that are underperforming for some reason, they're mismanaged. Mm-hmm. So could you talk a little bit about each asset? I know it's basics to you. You've thought so much on this, but for the audience, it'd be exciting to hear what are these opportunities. And it's very different from other asset classes because you go look for a multifamily, you know, you're not thinking of converting industrial building into multifamily. It doesn't happen that often. Mm-hmm. But with self-storage, it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about it. Start anywhere you like.
I'll kind of go in reverse order because that's how our business has evolved. And we begin looking at the best way to get into self-storage is buy an existing facility. And of course, coming from the apartment world and the single family world, that's how we started. So looking for the value add opportunities. And so, the MO for years was to find an existing facility that is underperforming. It's a tired owner. They took their hands off the wheel. They just weren't, mom and pop that usually weren't up on technology or marketing the facility. And for whatever reason, as you said, it's a fairly simple business. But some of these folks just were asleep at the wheel. And so we go in there and we increase occupancy, raise rents, add all the bolt-on income streams, ancillary income streams that we can add to a facility. And then if there's ground, we sought out properties that were, say, 4 to 5 acres in size, but they had only built on 2, 3, or 4 acres, giving us the ability to, once we cured the vacancy issues, accounts receivable, got rents up, adding the other profit centers, and then we would build additional buildings on top of that. So that's the real value add. Then we started looking at conversions, which is the next easiest step, if you will, to get into the business. And that is, you have to find these industrial buildings, warehouses, vacant Walmarts, grocery stores, you name it. Something that hopefully had zoning already in place for storage, or at least with a minor variance or getting a permitted use for storage. It is the buildings, as you mentioned, that they've been picked over by the condo folks or the apartment folks. It didn't make sense for retail. They've been languishing on the market and nobody wanted them. It didn't make sense to, from a cost standpoint to convert them to anything else or location or whatever that may be. So then we would get them in for a low cost, as low as possible. And then we'd have this shell to be able to then convert and put storage in. And it was very inexpensive to put up doors and walls inside it. And typically, Mike, the reason why we love the conversion model is because we're focusing on infill locations where the cities aren't granting new permits or zoning for storage. But then also, in fact, it's just a quicker time to market and, less competition. There's barriers to competition, barrier to entry, because it's already, in an area that is highly filled with rooftops, with apartments and condos and everything else inside. And then the last piece, which is the ground up development that we talked about, it's a little longer process. A little more laborious, if you will, is finding a piece of dirt in the right location. And as you said, starting with, we do our own internal, if you will, a market study / feasibility study internally now, but we still go to the consultants and have them take a look at the market. And they'll draw 1, 3, and 5 mile radius to look at the supply index, look what's coming in place, is the zoning in place, and build out, model out what it would look like to put in, X amount of square foot of self-storage in this market. Will it absorb it? What are the rents currently in the market? And then work backwards from there to see, if the model makes sense, depending upon the type and the style of construction that we either choose to do or that the city is going to demand. For us to be able to build in those areas. And so it's all fun. I mean, I love the development side. I think there's a little boy in all of us that used to love to play the sandbox, and now we get to do it for real. The conversions, I'm a junker at heart. I love just creating value in things. And so that's always a fun project. And then any time that we can take, a distressed asset and then be able to polish it up and turn it around just because somebody really wasn't doing the right things, that's where we shine. And so everything that we do is value add. There's really nothing that we do that is just we buy it and it's turnkey and it just kind of produces income stream. That's to me, that is kind of an unsafe way, if you will, to invest if you don't build a buffer in from the beginning. But you know, those are the ways that we primarily focus on making money in self-storage. Now, obviously, there's many more. There's people that wholesale these. They get dirt shovel ready for a developer like myself to come along, and then they flip it to us, and they make a profit on it. Multiple ways of making money in storage, but primarily those are the three areas that we're focusing on right now.
Thank you. That was really insightful. I wanted to comment on a couple of things that you said. So number one, you don't buy anything retail. You actually sell retail. You sell it to some of the big self-storage facilities can be sold to publicly traded REITs. They become, they buy that stuff because to them, they want an operating facility with high occupancy, low vacancy, fully operating, and they'll pay retail price because they have access to cheap capital. So from that perspective, it's a good exit strategy for you, and it's a good entry point for them.
And that's been one of our focus on all these facilities that either we're going to buy and expand, but more so on the conversions and on the development side is we're developing facilities that are, if we can, 60,000 square foot or higher. You know, we can dip down into that 55,000, but once you get over 60,000 square foot, then all of a sudden, you know, once that is built, once it is converted and up and running, then that is that's what the REITs, the Real Estate Investment Trust, the national players are looking for. And they're the folks that, you're right, they have access to cheap capital. So they're willing to actually pay more and absorb a lower cap rate to be able to just fold those into the mix for their shareholders. And so that's kind of our goal. If we can get more money out of those types just by searching for a bigger project, by the sheer fact that it's bigger and it's more attractive to those folks, the multiple for us on the back end and the exit strategy increases quite a bit.
Actually, Flagship Fund has two projects right now. And I said they are both ground up. I misspoke. One of them is a ground up, and one of them is a conversion of an old Macy's. So in today's day and age of Amazon eating everybody's lunch in retail, Macy's, Sears, Kmart's, I mean, you name it, many other old department stores, these well-positioned malls that have fresh competition from newer malls and Amazon, essentially kill any business in those locations, but they are phenomenal. They got massive parking, lots of people need to park, and they have the building that is built that's got pretty much everything it needs, other than the walls have to be moved, some internal configurations have to be changed, and they can be turned into self-storage. So we have a project in Richmond Heights, I think it's Cleveland, it's in the Cleveland area. And so I wanted to say, when I look at the numbers, the financials of these projects, the numbers just look phenomenal. Just the amount of investment and the time it takes is not that terrible, and the risk factor is not that high, and then the upside is pretty good. So, I mean, it's not a guaranteed, but it's these conversion projects present opportunity. And then I know we have a couple of projects in Sheboygan that are coming along. So those probably present outstanding opportunities, and I think it's an area of opportunity. It's funny, we do some business in Jacksonville, Florida with my partners, and we started marketing. We started looking for potential conversion projects or maybe older facilities. And some interesting opportunities have come along. I'll talk to you offline. So. Sure.
Absolutely. But that, you know, one of the points I wanted to touch on that you mentioned is, you know, the fact that, this isn't a simple business, but you know what, we have a somewhat predictable business model. So for me, that's the fun part. When you can take a look to see what it's going to look like afterwards, you can see what the rent rates are in the market. And if you build X amount of square feet and when you get to 85% occupancy, once it's stabilized, here's the income, you know, the gross potential, we know what the expenses are going to be and we know the ratios. And so once we back into that in the project, I mean, it takes a while. There's an art and a science to that. But the good news is there's an art and a science to it. And so we can, you know, fairly accurately predict what it's going to look like. And first of all, whether the project is going to work or not. But then also, you know, we come darn close on hitting our numbers, not only at the exit strategy, but even our lease-up rate along the way. And that's again, one of the beauties of self-storage is kind of, like you said, it's a business and real estate because it's kind of like a consumer product. Cleverly disguised as real estate. You know, we know those numbers as to how many people within a market are going to rent because it's fairly constant.
That's my favorite word. If you describe real estate with one word, it's predictability. Especially today in the age of the stock market volatility, their predictability is incredibly low, while the real estate is much higher. And I think self-storage is probably one of the most predictable subclasses within real estate because of the fact that you know what the rent. Also, what I really love about self-storage is that the fact that you could increase the price by a little bit, by 5-10%, and then the tenants don't blink. They're not happy about it. They'll, you know, say a couple of complaints, but in reality, they're not going to move their junk over for $5 a month or $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's, you know, our leases are 30-day leases. And, once that occupancy rises, we don't do it every month. We won't do any raises that often. But, you know, depending upon the facility, 7 to 9 months, we're going to have an increase. And, you're right. You know, that as a percentage, that's 3, 5, 7 bucks a month. You know, they're not going to bother to come down, you know, rent a U-Haul truck and get their brother-in-law on a Sunday to move all their stuff and pay another $20 fee at someplace else that's probably more expensive than the place they were at just because they're angry about a rent increase. I mean, $5-7 a month times 400 units times 12, you know, at an 8 cap, that's real value. And all that was generated by was a notice that went out that said, hey, rent's going up, you know, got an increase in cost, and we're passing that along to you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love how you manage things, little things like that. Then you add, instead of putting, you know, taking on a deposit, you add some kind of an admin fee, because deposit you have to be give back, admin fee you don't. Little things like that, they make a big difference. And as they say, death by 1,000 cuts or growth by 1,000 roses or some little, you know, something like that.
Yep. That's the way we approach it. And again, the beauty of self-storage is that our money buys a lot more units, which means that we have a greater ability to be able to increase the NOI on these properties, and it works.
So I've talked to some folks, and I'm sure you've heard of this. People have been talking about self-storage condos. I don't know. It's the latest concept. I don't know if you've seen any projects yet, or this is just in the stages of infancy. But it's an amazing that you can actually build a facility and then sell individual units to investors, basically on seller financing, and then they sort of own a subunit. It's like a condo hotel and some sort of like that. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, it's been around for a while, Mike. And what happened is during the last recession, there's a lot of developers that, you know, their business model got turned upside down and business actually shut off. And so, you know, self-storage, you know, again, another one of the benefits of it is that during a recession, you know, we have a higher demand for it. But also during that time, there was a lot of folks that were running their businesses that scaled down, or they were even starting new businesses, but they didn't need a big warehouse. They needed something inexpensive. And so, you know, the developers who didn't have any work started building some of these condos. They didn't want to run a self-storage facility, but they built these condos, and so they would sell them off. And then they would kind of keep the homeowners association, you know, they keep the entire project and get some fees from that, which is good. I get that. But I'm, you know, I like the fact that we can rent stuff out. I like to own it and rent it out. And as soon as you sell a condo, you got to go build more. You know, but if that's counting out as your business model, I mean, the residual income is much lower on just, you know, the association of those condos that you've sold off. And then what you have is nothing but problems from them. I mean, not much. They're steel boxes on concrete slabs. But, you know, for the returns on just managing that, I'd rather have the box back every time when somebody's done with it. And I re-rent it over and over and over again. And as rates increase, because once you sell it, you sold it once and you sold it at that market value at that time, you got to go build more if you're going to ever build that again. So I like the passive. I don't like active income. I like passive income. To each their own. It's a good business model. But boy, you gotta, you have to kill what you eat over and over again. Just like if you were building anything else, you know, if you're building regular condos, you know, for people to live in or anything else to sell off, it's just a process that you have to repeat over and over.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like great long-term investments. You work for it, I guess, once, and then it works for you for a long time.
Yep.
So, yeah, I completely understand, appreciate that. One more question about location of self-storage. So I live in New York City, and it's there are no bad areas anymore here. I'm in Brooklyn. It's like everything's got gentrified, no rough. So they're building them everywhere they could find possibly location where it's industrial or something near the train yards. We have, you know, one of the big facilities popped up owned by Smart Cube, where residential would never build because the trains are just going, it's just too way loud, but perfect for self storage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if folks considering conversion or thinking to build new, or just, is there a particular kind of basic rules? Are C neighborhoods good, B neighborhoods, A neighborhoods? Is there particular kind of a thought on this around? Because even, again, the laughing, we're looking right now in Jacksonville, Florida, and we found some opportunities and the areas look like a C-minus area. Mm-hmm. Do we even look there? And what's an ideal location? What do you think? Is it better to be in a B area, C area, A area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, many ways to go about if you're looking to convert or develop something, if you're looking to come into a market or analyze, a market, if you will. But just remember, you know, as we talked about, you know, our market is really only 3 miles. So if we're in a particular area, you know, so in other words, you know, for the folks that are listening, you know, we don't say that, you know, Dallas is overbuilt, or I would never go and, you name it, I'm not going to discredit any cities that yeah. We know the distressed cities or parts of cities are, I would never say that I'm never going to invest there, because some of our most profitable facilities and others that are students owned are in our lower income areas. So it's really a function of, the definition by the Self-Storage Association, many developers, they say that our sweet spot is a median income of about $45,000. Because when you get considerably less than that, then, you know, these folks just don't have enough money for stuff, let alone additional money to pay on a monthly basis. If they don't have two nickels to rub together, there's not a need for storage. So, you know, in that $45,000 median income range is okay. Yeah.
But again, it depends on the cities. In some cities, in the rural area, $45,000 is a good amount of money. Right. You go either in New York, it's like you're barely,
below poverty.
Below poverty level.
Mm-hmm. So it really is. So to that point, Mike, it's really a function of the rates in the market of, you know, the self-storage rates. So if we look at the competitors in and around this particular building, let's say that you found that you're looking to convert perhaps. Well, I'm going to look at the other self-storage facilities around it, see if I can gauge what their occupancy is to know if there's demand and if they're, you know, full, if they're struggling, and then what their rental rates are. So then, you know, if we look at the building that we're going to buy, what is the amount of square footage we're going to end up with after we build it? We'll give up 30% to hallways and doors, so we'll have X amount of net rentable square feet. And if we multiply that times the average rental rate per square foot, because we've already gathered that from the other competitors, and that's really easy to do. They got it online, or you walk in and, you know, in half an hour you have all the rates of everybody and you get the average. So here's your top line revenue. And then after that, again, it's a function of just, you know, plugging in the puzzle pieces. Here's the property taxes on the building. Here's what it's going to cost for insurance, you know, management. We know what those are, but even most folks will go out and they can just put a 35% to 40% expense ratio on that top line number. That'll give you, you know, here's what your net operating income is going to be on that. And then you use that to back in the cost of the building and then what it's going to cost per square foot to add in the hallways and doors, you know, minus roof or elevator or anything else. And so, you know, there's 10 pieces that I mentioned. There's obviously more within each one of those, but again, fairly simple. I mean, you can do the basics on the back of a napkin. Say, here's the rental rates at 85%. Here's a net rentable square foot. Here's what I'm going to end up with. Subtracting, you know, 35% expense ratio minus what it costs for the building. Is it going to work? And literally within about 20 to 30 minutes, you can analyze a building to take a second look and then a third and a fourth, fifth, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I just love how you analyze this stuff. I actually wanted to ask you, for the audience, for folks who are interested, they should come to your events. And the question, because we're running out of time, I greatly appreciate all your thoughts, but I wanted to get the information for the audience. If they wanted to learn a little bit more about self-storage, come to one of your events. Mm-hmm. What's the good website to go? How do they learn more about how do they register for one of your events?
Sure. You can go directly to selfstorageacademy.com, and it has our next events coming up live. But then we got a lot of freebies, a lot of other educational videos, and some free resources out there at selfstorageinvesting.com. That's selfstorageinvesting.com is the main site, and that also has our live event schedule on that as well. So that's the place to go to. We'll teach you folks about self-storage, a lot of tips and resources and other areas in which to go within the industry to get your feet wet.
Yeah, that's great. And I'll be the first to attest that I've been to Self Storage Academy and I've been to Self Storage Mastermind, and I love both events. So that's my two cents comments.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. It was good to have you.
That was great. But I have to ask one more question. This is a really important question. And is there a book that you could recommend? Something you're reading now, something you read in the past, anything that comes to mind that folks could benefit from reading?
Yeah, but, you know, probably a whole lot. I mean, as you know,
start with one. I mean, start somewhere.
Mike and I are in a mastermind together, and traction has been brought up over and over again. And really, what I go back to is the E myth, because, you know, as you know, Mike, it's really a lot of traction. There's a lot of E myth, just, you know, regurgitated, repackaged, but also in a different way. So I say, you know, systems run the business, and just having standard operating procedures for even the smallest details is what allowed. Has allowed us to be able to scale our business. We've seen some incredible growth. And when you're constantly, if you're still operating from a standpoint of, you know, Google Docs here, Dropbox there, and you don't know whose responsibility or who's in your business, or when you bring on somebody else, if there's no type of training manual or standard operating procedures to point them to, you're going to have a tough time not only managing what you've got, but growing or scaling at that point. So it's just real good to have, you know, start with a work chart and put it on a whiteboard and outline what everybody's roles and responsibilities are, and make sure that you got the right people on the bus, the wrong people off, and that you are spending 80% or more of your time in your unique ability, which is what's going to drive the business forward. You know, for me, that's analyzing deals. I don't really search for deals much anymore. I mean, I do a degree, but it's analyzing deals that come in and then matching it up with the capital that makes sense, whether it's a bank debt, and then using you, Mike, and your resources and funds, as well as some of our investor partners. That's where I need to spend 80% of my time. So to sum it up, I think the sooner you get to the place where you're spending 80% of your time doing what you should be doing in your business and letting systems run the rest of it, that's been most helpful. And traction and E-Myth will help you get there.
Got it. Yeah, traction is great, Brooklyn. We love it too. And I love the genius zone concept. So if you're in the genius zones, you're the most productive. So,
mm-hmm. Yep, agreed.
Scott, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I'm grateful and I appreciate so much you having coming here.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Mike. It's good to catch up with you again.
Likewise.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.